What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron, and regular on the show, Jack Manuel. Guys, what's up?
Was Corey and I stole his outro when we did the buzz yesterday?
No, you said peace out, knuckleheads.
I did.
Touché, did. Well played.
Now he just confirmed that you don't listen to the buzz. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm just kidding.
And I mean, it's just a schedule episode. But back to the topic. Actually, quick shout out to Corey, who's been dropping a ton of shows for Full Access Hoops, which you could find on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com. And also shout out to Jack and Corey, because they'll be dropping a top 50 for OTG in the upcoming weeks, where they'll break down the top 50 players in the NBA, a little bit of last season, a little bit of this upcoming season. So that's exciting.
Yeah, for sure.
That one is going to be a doozy.
Yeah, hopefully it brings some debate. And we can even say it now, Jack's going to be on Full Access Hoops next week as well. So maybe if some of the top 50 is out, we can debate some of that too.
Stay tuned.
There you go. If not, we'll for sure have a podcast about that. And I can confirm these two have been debating a lot about the top 50. So it's going to be a lot of interesting discussions, especially heading into next season. But before we get started, quick reminder, you can find us, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. But you also can find OTG merch at DesignTree/OffTheGlass. But guys, let's jump into it. Today, we're doing the top 15 of OTG's NBA Power Rankings coming to us via the staff. We did the previous 15 on the last show, and I'll read them off real quick. Starting from the bottom, we got Hornets, Cavs, Knicks, Suns, Wizards, Grizzlies, Bulls, Thunder, Hawks, Timberwolves, Magic, Kings, Pistons, Pelicans, and Mavericks. And today we're starting off with the Miami Heat at number 15. Thoughts on them?
Yeah, the Miami Heat obviously adding Jimmy Butler. You think that this would elevate them from what they were last season, but in a lot of ways, nothing has really changed. I think Jimmy Butler is certainly going to get some kudos. There's some hot takes running around him on OTGBasketball.com. Jorge's been out there having a little bit of fun with that. But, you know, I think that the Miami Heat are what they are. And until that they can form this, get another superstar, or Goran Dragic can stay healthy, or trade some guys and get Bradley Beal or John Wall or whatever the heck might be happening there, they're going to be a perennial 6-8 seed in the Eastern Conference, which isn't a bad thing. But they're going to be steady, and they're always going to be around that sort of 13-18 range when it comes to these power rankings.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Miami struck, I don't want to say they struck gold, but they did well this offseason, bringing in a star in Jimmy Butler. Obviously, they lost Josh Richardson in that deal. You still have Bam Adebayo, which is a nice young center. But I feel like this is like a middle of the East team. Maybe they can get as high as a 5 seed, but they're somewhere between the 5 and 8 seed range. I really think they're a playoff team. There's just not a lot of upside. They're still contracts on the books. They need to move. They did good getting off of Whiteside this past offseason. But, you know, again, you need to add more talent, and they're still kind of tied up.
Yeah, you guys are pretty much spot on. Obviously, getting Jimmy Butler this offseason was huge considering the assets and the cap space they had, but they're not really going to take that next step until they get another star, like Jack mentioned. Maybe that's a Bradley Beal, John Wall package. Maybe it's something else. But for the Heat, I think 15 is pretty fair.
Yeah. In terms of, this might be more of a question for the previous series and maybe Jorge as well. Do you think the addition of Jimmy Butler could stunt the growth of Justice Winslow?
I mean, it will take the ball out of his hands a little bit more. And then obviously if Dragic is healthy, he's going to be getting more minutes than last season where he was kind of banged up and all over the place. So, I mean, it could possibly, but it also could help take him to another level because obviously Jimmy Butler being a star in the NBA can teach Winslow a couple things.
Yeah, it really depends on how you bounce off the energy and vibe that Jimmy Butler brings to a team. So, as we know, he's really, I mean, he's just, I don't want to say he's a loose cannon, but he's just almost unpredictable, especially when losing kicks in. But a lot of these young guys, especially this Miami Heat team, which already kind of has that chip on their shoulder mentality, at least they did in the last couple of years, Jimmy Butler might just add to that fuel.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think the vibe that he has with Jimmy Butler is going to determine a lot, and that goes for pretty much everybody on the team. So next up in the rankings, we have the San Antonio Spurs at number 14.
Yeah, the San Antonio Spurs, with a couple of plays on this squad that Corey and I had some fun trying to fit into that top 50. But, you know, I think that next season it's going to be the DeJounte Murray, the backcourt show with Derek White, and see what those two guys. And, I mean, you add in a Lonnie Walker who had a really nice summer league too. Obviously, we know what Pop is. Pop's doing his thing at Team USA. You know, I think that the defense, you know, adding Damari Carroll as well, former net, I think is going to add to their sort of wing depth. They just have solid guys. They're, you know, you look at the Heat and the Spurs, you know, you could probably flip-flop them a little bit. But I think the Spurs, with the coaching of Greg Popovich, obviously there's some great coaching in Miami with Eric Spoelstra. But, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge will be waning. I'm interested to see, you know, how much more sustained production we can get out of him and DeMar DeRozan, if he's ever going to shoot a bloody three again. But the San Antonio Spurs, you know, there's a lot of guys who probably have them on the outside of the playoffs. I think that they probably are an 8 seed. But that's just off the top of my head. Obviously, I need to do a little bit more research. But, you know, the Spurs at this sort of range seems right.
They're a borderline playoff team. I think it's easy to say they make it as the playoff team. They haven't missed a playoff in, what, 22 straight years? Is that still the streak?
Yep.
You know, and it feels like the last couple of years especially, we've been kind of on the fence on whether or not they're going to make the playoffs. It's kind of been trending downward. But again, DeJounte Murray coming back, as you mentioned. Derek White looks like he's going to be a guy who they can lean on heavier in the future. DeMar DeRozan is still DeMar DeRozan. Aldridge a little bit up there in age, but still a consistent double-double guy. And, of course, Greg Popovich is the biggest X factor. As long as he's there, this team is going to be put into winning situations. So I like the Spurs here at 14. There's a lot of Western Conference teams above them. But, again, this is a team that's going to be competitive and probably be fighting for that 8 spot.
Yeah, I think I look at the Spurs as probably a likely playoff team, but not a guarantee. And I think you guys kind of mentioned him. DeJounte Murray is going to be kind of the X factor for this season. Where is he when he comes back? Obviously, I believe coming off a torn ligament in his leg. Can he come back and be the player that we saw and take another step forward? You know, all defensive type team player, but offensively, can he improve that three-point shot and give them what they need? Because like you mentioned, Corey, Derek White's a guy they're looking for a big future of, and he's had a really big Team USA camp. So there are some positives there. I think an interesting thing I have is DeMar DeRozan going to make it through the season with the Spurs? He's been on the trading block, it seems like, two or three times already.
I posted this on the JBT Facebook page, that there's talks that they want to offer him a contract extension even.
Interesting.
They're interested. I think that was via the San Antonio Express News. I'm not sure if that really makes a lot of sense, but you know, I think that we've sort of, if you're looking back to the history of what's happened in San Antonio, LaMarcus Aldridge, Pau Gasol, there's a sort of a family sort of mentality, and they like to give their guys their due. So it certainly wouldn't surprise me, but you know, I would probably be more in your line of thinking, Nick, because I don't know, DeMar DeRozan doesn't really, you know, spin the wheel for you. I think, you know, your ceiling is based off your young guys now. DeJounte Murray, all NBA caliber, all defensive NBA caliber guard, and has been working out with Tim Duncan and some cool photos that have been making the rounds as well. So I don't think the future is with DeMar and LaMarcus. It's now with Derek White, Lonnie Walker, DeJounte Murray, and you need to build around that going forward.
Yeah, I feel similar to Jack on this one. I think LaMarcus Aldridge is the one guy you want to keep going forward. As DeMar DeRozan, as you said, Nick, with the rumors of him being possibly traded, it just makes more sense. He kind of came into the league like 10 years too late. There's just too many guys who can shoot threes. He's not a guy who has that in his arsenal. Yes, he's a very good mid-range scorer. And actually, probably a below-average passer. We saw him get better in that category this past year. Still a so-so defender. It wouldn't make any sense, in my opinion, for the Spurs to keep DeRozan long-term. But again, how many guys are really interested, or how many teams, I should say, are interested in a guy like DeRozan, who is sort of limited offensively in today's NBA?
And still has, I think, a player option for the next season. So definitely something to keep an eye on. And kind of how the whole Spurs season go. You know, we mentioned Pop is getting up there in age. Are they going to definitely try to push everything forward and compete for the playoffs? Or they'd be okay if they trade away DeRozan and just let the young guys grow for a year? Just something to think about for them. But on to the next team, NBA champs, Toronto Raptors at number 13.
Yeah, obviously you lose Kawhi Leonard, you're certainly going to drop a few spots, but, you know, we saw what they could do without him last season. You know, Kyle Lowry's been at Team USA camp and would probably be still there if his injuries weren't sort of lingering. You know, Marc Gasol waning, aging, but still a very solid NBA player, as is Serge Ibaka. But it's going to be the spicy P show heading into next season. Funnily enough, I posted something on the JBT Facebook page. You're on $2.4 million heading into next season. He's probably the number one free agent in this pretty weak free agency market in 2020, albeit he is a restricted free agent. And, you know, it'd be silly if he's not offered at least near a max by the Toronto Raptors as they go building forward. But it's going to be on his shoulders. And he proved a few times last season that he can be the guy. You know, does that three-point shot start to become a bit more consistent? You know, he's good with the ball in his hands. He's a superb athlete and a great defender. But it's going to be on Spicy P to sort of, you know, lead the Raptors to, you know, I think their ceiling is a third seed. But I think that no matter what, their basement, because of Nick Nurse and the depth that they have on their roster and just solid NBA players, I think that they're making the playoffs no matter what, bar some injuries.
See, I see this team being anywhere from a 3 seed down to like a 10 seed.
Wow.
And what I say by that is because I'm not sure they keep all of these guys throughout the season. Gasol expiring, Lowry expiring. There is a chance this team just kind of stumbles. Maybe some of these guys show their age in Ibaka, Gasol, and they look to unload some of these guys to build to that future on Pascal Siakam's back with OJ and Anunoby maybe getting a bigger role, Fred VanVleet and guys like that. So I could see this team being in the middle of the hunt in the East, being a playoff team and being steady, but I could also see them stumbling and then trying to sell off some of these guys. They actually look towards a rebuild because now with Kawhi gone, you know, this isn't going to be your core for your next title run.
Yeah, I think they're in a good spot in terms of the rankings because I don't think they'll probably get much higher in the rankings. They could go down a few spots, but they'll still be a pretty good team, depending on, like you mentioned, Corey, and I know we had Nick Cuvallo on the Brooklyn Buzz talking about the Raptors a little bit, and he thinks that they'll probably end up trading one of the guys because you don't want to let all three hit free agency and not get any assets back. So I think the Raptors are good in this spot. I probably have them from like a 4 to 7 seed. I think they'll likely make the playoffs unless they trade out everybody. Just because Siakam's so good and OG Anunoby's going to take a step forward. And then also Nick Nurse, like Jack mentions, excellent coach. Up next, number 12, the Brooklyn Nets.
Brooklyn Nets, baby. I know that there's some people who in the national media who aren't the biggest fans of them. Brian Windhorst and Bill Simmons on their recent pod didn't have the kindest of words to say. But, you know, I think that the Brooklyn Nets could be a couple of spots lower. You know, I think that I had the Raptors higher than them just because I believe in the floor of the Raptors a little more than the floor of the Nets. You know, I think that they're both of those teams, along with the Pacers, who we'll be getting to very shortly, are going to be fighting for that sort of third seed. We know, and we'll get to the teams that are a little bit higher up, who those teams are going to be. But it's going to be Kyrie Irving and Caris LeVert, the backcourt duo that we spoke about in the Brooklyn Buzz, Nick, that are going to have to lead this team into to success next season. Yes, you know, Jared Allen taking a jump, DeAndre Jordan playing some nice pick and roll and getting back to his best ways on defense and in that sort of regard, as well as, you know, Torian Prince playing a little bit of defense for once in his career. There's plenty of things that can show this Nets team could take a nice little jump. I'm not super high on them taking, you know, an 8 to 10 win jump, but I think that they have a relatively high ceiling if all things do go well. And their floor isn't horrible, despite the fact that, you know, everyone hates on Kyrie Irving as a teammate. They're spending time in LA, they're hanging out, and even Melo's shipping in here and there too.
So I want to say when we did our rankings, I was the second highest on the Brooklyn Nets in terms of power ranking. I had them 8th.
That's why he's the co-host of the outlet. No, I'm just kidding.
I had them 8th. Like, I mean, just look at the teams that we have ahead of them, like the Pacers, Celtics in particular, like, or in the Rockets. I'm not sure those three teams are better than the Nets. The Celtics, to me, yes, Kemba Walker's ninth edition didn't get much better. Rockets, that's a weird fit. Pacers don't have Oladipo. Like, I think the Nets could be even higher because realistically, yes, you're bringing in Kyrie Irving. Yes, Durant's not going to play. You still got DeAndre Jordan, Garrett Temple. There's just a lot of depth to this team, and especially Dinwiddie's healthy. If Caris LeVert takes that jump, if Jared Allen takes that jump, I mean, maybe Joe Harris becomes a better three-point shooter with the options around him. I think the Nets are a little bit low right now. I think a lot of people are just kind of concerned with the fit of Kyrie Irving. But this is going to be a team that's really deep, and they're going to be extremely competitive and a tough team to beat, especially once they get that chemistry down. They've already been spending a lot of time together. Yes, Melo's even been hanging around, and now the rumors are out. Maybe the Nets are looking to sign Melo. I don't think that's true. Or maybe that's a rumor that people are making up on Twitter. But yeah, I think the Nets are in a good spot, obviously. We've been talking about this all offseason. They got Durant and Kyrie. What does this team look like? This is probably a little bit low for me, but I mean, again, we have to see this team actually play with their new pieces.
Yeah, and I think Melo might have made that rumor up himself. No, but I think it's
fire.
No, I'm just kidding. Honestly, like, if the Nets were to sign Melo, it would only be if somebody were to get hurt because their roster is full. But back to the rankings, I think 12 is probably fair because people haven't seen the Nets yet. But I agree with Corey, they could probably be as high as 10. You know, like you mentioned, the Pacers would be without Oladipo, and the Celtics obviously lost not only Kyrie, they lost Al Horford, which I think is being really underrated. And I think the Nets are a really deep team, like you mentioned. A lot of young guys in the squad are still going to take a jump forward. And if you want, obviously, more in-depth Nets coverage, head to the Brooklyn Buzz. Now, number 11, Corey's team, Indiana Pacers.
Very nice offseason for the Indiana Pacers. Corey was ecstatic. I'm never going to get over the reaction on the live outlet of the Pacers not landing Ricky Rubio and getting Mark Washington. It was a wonderful moment and one that I'll hold dear for the rest of my life. But I think that the Pacers, signing Jeremy Lamb, I think, was an underrated signing too. But at the end of the day, you know, we speak about the star players on each team. They will only go as far as Victor Oladipo will take them. And I have no intel. I might even go to you, Corey. What is the news on Victor Oladipo? Has he been posting anything on Instagram? Is there anything on Reddit? Are there Reddit theories going around? When's he going to be back? Because, you know, the Pacers could be a lot lower in this ranking if he's not back until, you know, January or even All-Star time.
Definitely back before All-Star time. It's been looked at as late December, early January.
Okay.
He's doing well with his rehab. He started a YouTube series, even kind of documenting his rehab process and everything that's going on. I think it's called like the VO show. It's just like a life, you know, day in the life type of thing. And, you know, he seems to be good running and everything else. And now it's just about them getting him back on the court at a point in time where they don't have any fear of maybe him re-aggravating the injury or not being 100%. Because at this point in time, Oladipo is not going to touch the court until he's fully healthy. They're not going to have him go out there until he's absolutely certain that he can participate at the highest level.
With that, Corey, I'll throw it to you. With this team as it's currently constructed, you know, obviously Oladipo was out for, you know, the large chunks of last season. Is this team not worse? You take out, you know, Bojan Bogdanović, Thaddeus Young, who I think were two absolutely crucial pieces to, you know, the semblance of late season success. Obviously, they weren't horribly successful in the playoffs, but those are two massive pieces, two massive losses to this Pacers squad.
You probably missed Thaddeus. It's not, I don't know if this is a hot take. You missed Thaddeus Young way more than you missed Bojan Bogdanović.
Okay.
Now, yes, Bojan was the best scorer for the Pacers last year without Oladipo and the best three-point shooter, but that's, I don't want to say it's easy to fill that hole in, but they filled it in. Jeremy Lamb, TJ Warren, Malcolm Brogdon, they got plenty of offense to miss the offense they're going to lose from Bogdanović. So I'm cool with that. Now, the rebounding, the defense, the hustle, the tenacity, the leadership that Thaddeus Young, that's a little bit different. I'm not sure who the leader is of this team. I'm sure it's Victor Oladipo. You know, Miles Turner's been there for a few years. Maybe he steps into that role. Brogdon's out to be in the league for a couple years. Now, like, the veteran role is kind of the gap. But I'm not too concerned about losing those guys because I think they got enough offensive weapons. And that's been the issue with this team is there hasn't been enough offense. There's been plenty of defense. You still have your key defensive players. You still have the defense at the key positions, the guard and at center. And now you have more three-point shooters. So I'm not too worried about the guys they lost. I think they got enough pieces to make up for it.
It's almost a different Pacers team, obviously. Bring in three guys like that. Now it's a little bit more spread out offensively, like you mentioned, Bogdanović not being there. But guys like Brogdon can step up. Lamb, obviously, is a great scorer, isolating on his own. And then TJ Warren, I think, is arguably one of the more intriguing pieces in the offseason that I feel like no one really talked about. I feel like if you were traded before free agency started, no one really remembers that you switched teams.
Yeah.
Because I kind of feel the same way about Torian Prince, and no one's really talked about TJ Warren, who's put up some really good numbers in Phoenix, but it's like, can he do it in a winning situation?
Yeah, and especially if Domantas Sabonis is playing the four alongside Miles Turner, which has been rumored. I'm interested to see that sort of front court combination that Coach McMillan goes with.
I mean, that's the biggest question mark, is can Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis coexist? Can those two guys actually play a decent amount of minutes side by side? We saw it for stretch for small amounts last year, and they weren't bad, but they weren't great. And now, obviously, that's going to be what they want to they want to go against the grain. As everyone's going smaller, the Pacers want to be stubborn and still have a couple bigs. So we'll have to see how that works.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And I think 11 is probably fair for them right here. Maybe a couple
especially
spots
with less. Especially with Oladipo. I mean, cause like we said, there's a lot of new pieces. This is a different Pacers team than last year. You know, a lot. You don't have the same nucleus. You know, Bogdanovich, Collison, Corey Joseph, Thaddeus Young, Kyle O'Quinn. Granted, O'Quinn's like the weird name to throw in the mix, but all of those guys are gone.
Yeah, especially Collison. Like, he was a steadying force from that point guard, and it seemed like he would hit some timely buckets. And obviously, he kind of like randomly retired, which is a surprise, but at least they were able to grab Brogdon. Next up, though,
A Jehovah's Witness, just to say. To become a Jehovah's Witness is why he retired.
Whatever makes you happy. Obviously, he probably has plenty of NBA money. So, but the Celtics at number 10.
Yeah, I mean, the Boston Celtics, or the Team USA Celtics, should we call it. I actually think that that's going to have an incredibly positive effect on this Boston Celtics team. And, you know, I was a little bit high on them. And I think that the fact that Kemba Walker, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, who is injured but probably will still make the Team USA squad, I think that's going to really help them in the early parts of the season. You know, Brad Stevens made a little bit of an appearance as well. He isn't actually a coach there, but obviously the guys have been going to dinners. I think Jason Tatum's going to have a nice little bounce back season. You know, Jaylen Brown, I think the chemistry is going to be a lot better. But I think, you know, a storyline that's going underlooked, we know about the loss of Al Horford and how they're going to fill that sort of center has been, you know, probably, you know, earmarked pretty consistently. It's like, you know, Enes Kanter cannot play defense, and, you know, Grant Williams and all these other sort of guys, you know, it's a big, big hole. But, you know, Gordon Hayward, what version of Gordon Hayward do the Boston Celtics have heading into next season? You know, what sort of piece is he? You know, does his contract turn into a Chandler Parsons sort of situation? We haven't really heard much about him and what he's sort of been doing in the offseason. There's been some gaming photos here and there and some workout photos here and there. But, you know, if they can get some sort of semblance, and, you know, we know it took the Paul George sort of a full year to get his sort of legs back, and now he was in the MVP conversation finishing third last season. You know, if they can get some version of Utah Jazz Paul Gordon Hayward back, then this Celtics team could be very, very good.
I wholeheartedly agree with your sentiment on Team USA playing a factor for the Celtics team. For a team that kind of lacked unity and chemistry last year, it's really good for Kemba Walker and those core guys to have this runtime together. Yes, Marcus Smart's banged up and not, I don't think, playing currently. But that's big for those guys. My biggest concern with this team is really just, you know, the rest of, like, the big man. Like, I mean, like, it's Enes Kanter and Time Master, right? That's his nickname.
Time Lord.
And then
Robert
Daniel
Williams Tice. And Daniel Tice, yeah.
Right. So it's I don't love that at all. That's problematic for rebounding, or maybe not even for rebounding if you had Kanter out there, but then he's a liability defensively. And like you mentioned, what is Gordon Hayward? Obviously, last year, I don't really like, yeah, last year was bad, but I don't hold it against him long term because Paul George is slow out the gate coming back from his bad injury. Those injuries, the first year, you just have to take it with a grain of salt to a degree. You want to see some flashes of the old Tim. You want to see some progress, but you can't hold it too much against the guy. This next year will be a real test for Hayward. How does he bounce back? Does he have more confidence? Is he a little bit quicker? So that will be something to watch for. I think the Celtics are a little bit too high, maybe. Because I just think it's a weird team. I like Jaylen Brown. I like Jason Tatum. I like Kemba. I like Marcus Smart. But the rest of this roster, to me, is just really questionable. Like, I just don't know how good this team is.
Yeah, it's going to be a good test for Brad Stevens, too. And I think he does better when he's kind of challenged in terms of talent because he can get a little bit more schematic. You know, he struggled probably a little bit last season managing personalities. But I agree. I think the front court is the real issue. Like, Enes Kanter, Robert Williams, and Daniel Tice pretty much playing center. Obviously, they have Taco. I don't expect him to really play much this season. So it's like, what
unless
do they do?
Tuesday. Unless it's a Tuesday. Maybe.
Unless it's a Taco Tuesday and they're playing LeBron. Yeah. Just a little distraction out there. But it's going to be interesting because, like you said, Corey, you know, it's an interesting like layout of players on this team. There's also a lot of rookies on this team. And it's just like, how is everything going to gel? And can they be as good as we kind of anticipated? And then both you guys made a great point about Gordon Hayward. And that's where I was going to go is like, what is Gordon Hayward going this season? Is he a starting level NBA player? Is he a really good bench player? Like, what is he going to provide that team, especially sharing pretty much the same position as Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum?
Yeah. I mean, also, I got to say, on the rookie front, really excited to see Carson Edwards, a guy who caught my eye when he was in college still for Purdue, and now balled out in summer league and definitely has a spot for that Celtics team going forward.
I mean, he could definitely probably get some backup point guard minutes because they don't really have a ton of veterans in terms of the guard position. They got Kemba, Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown's probably going to play a little bit more time at small forward, and then Wanamaker, who's, you know, played some minutes last year. So one of these rookies is really going to have to step up probably at the guard spot, and I know there's some expectations for Grant Williams as well in the front court. But I think 10 is probably okay. I would agree with Corey that they could technically be a little bit lower because it's still like a lot of parts coming in and not knowing. And defensively, I think Al Horford played a big part, not only defensively, but offensively with, you know, running the offense at times and setting excellent screens. But number 9, oh, go ahead, Jack.
Just the last sort of point, Nick. You look at 10, 11, 12, 13, you know, Celtics, Pacers, Nets, Raptors. Those are the teams that are fighting for that third seed. And funnily enough, the Celtics are the third best team out of the Eastern Conference teams for when we go through the rest of them. So I think that the cluster there, that cluster of four teams, is probably likely, you know, barring any injuries, probably health will be the number one factor, as it tends to be a lot of the time. Which team has their best players out there for longest? How many games does Kyrie play? How many games does Kemba play? How many games does Pascal Siakam and Kemba Walker play? But yeah, I think that you could roll a dice with any of those four teams.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, Jack, because like you said, they're all going to be kind of competing. They all have question marks in some way or another. And I think any order you put them in would probably be acceptable. And even probably with this next team, you can make an argument they could be mixing that bunch too, because, you know, they'll be missing one of their best players and they lost one of the best players in the NBA. And that's the Golden State Warriors at number 9.
See, I'm higher on the Golden State Warriors, but I just believe so much in the greatness of Stephen Curry. And I think that, you know, he's going to have an MVP caliber season. If he's my favorite, I think I said that on the buzz when we were talking about backcourts. I think that they're going to be great. And I like some of their, you know, signings. You know, I think Draymond Green is going to have a superb season. I think we could see him as a defensive player of the year and remind everyone why he's been one of the most transformative defensive players of yesteryear. And, you know, Klay Thompson, I think he's going to be back pretty soon. You know, I think that he's doing his work. You know, Rocco's helping him out too. And, you know, I'm excited to see what Steve Kerr can do with D'Angelo Russell as well. I think that they're going to have to change some things, especially on the offensive end, because, you know, they don't really like to play that sort of, you know, pick and roll sort of offense. But with him and Willie Cauley-Stein, I think you've got a nice little combination there. So I'm higher on the Warriors in a lot. And I think that they're, you know, an under-the-radar team that I think could be, you know, a championship-level contender, depending on how things, and if all things go well, Steph Curry stays healthy, Draymond Green is engaged for 82 games, and Klay Thompson does come back. And if the D'Angelo Russell experiment doesn't work, trade him for Robert Covington and pieces, and then you've got a new wing that you can add to that core as well. I'm higher on them than, for me, the next team that we will get to in the Portland Trailblazers.
Yeah, I have the Warriors 6th on my list. And, you know, we had Draymond Green today with Rachel Nichols go one-on-one and talk about how they feel like their chip on their shoulder is restored. And these rankings just, to me, scream like chip on my shoulder Warriors. This is still a team, like you mentioned, Jack. They have a defensive player in the year in Draymond Green. They have a two-time MVP in Steph Curry. Both of those guys have multiple championships. You're adding a young and hungry D'Angelo Russell, who's pissed off probably that the team that he just took to the playoffs for the first time in 5 years gave up on him for, well, I don't want to say gave up on him, but they took Kyrie Irving, who was more of a sure thing, and Kevin Durant than him. And at the same time, you have Klay Thompson, who, yes, tore his ACL. Is there concern? Yes, modern medicine, I take any day of the week when it comes to certain injuries. He probably gets back to near perfect him, comes back at whatever point in this year. He is still one of the best shooters in the league, maybe the second best. I have no concern for the Warriors being one of those top three teams in the West when things are probably said and done, or maybe at least top four, and being a team that you don't want to face in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think if Klay comes back healthy, you know, at the end of the season, they'll be a team that you don't want to face and, you know, one of the favorites in the West. But I think going to the season, I think the staff is okay having them at 9 just because there is some unknowns. Like, how is D'Angelo Russell going to fit in there? And obviously, you know, not having Klay there, Steph and Klay have had some great chemistry over the course of their careers. And now you have Draymond. Like, obviously, he's going to come and pissed off. But there's still questions with the rest of the roster not necessarily being super talented. Like, you just look at the rest of the team, they brought in some decent pieces, but there still isn't the same level of talent, especially when you lose a guy like Kevin Durant.
Yeah, but no, I think in that sort of saying, I think that they added not like a, like you sort of said, Nick, not an incredible amount of more depth, but they have more depth. Like, you know, I'd prefer to have Willie Cauley-Stein on the roster than Jonas Jerebko. I think that losing Jordan Bell was the wrong move, and I think a lot of other teams should have gone after him. And I think that he would have been, you know, probably a pretty nice piece then going forward. But I think that the relationship with Steve Kerr there going forward wasn't great. But I'm very intrigued, and I'm very high on the Warriors. Stephen Curry is just, he's just a beast, and he's going to go down as, you know, a guy who changed the game in so many ridiculous ways.
You know, I would just say one other concern I would have for the Warriors. Obviously, we know the dynasty and the stretches they've had going to the finals. How is that going to impact them this season, not having, you know, all the stars there? Because in the past, you know, it's okay. KD's going to miss a month. Steph's going to be out 2 weeks. Draymond's going to miss a couple games. Oh, we have three other all-stars. Now this year, it's just Steph and Draymond and D'Angelo, and then Klay's going to be coming back later. If Steph goes down for a stretch of games, what type of impact does that have, because they're relying on him so much more, and these guys have played a ton of minutes?
That's a fair worry to have. I mean, if this team does get hit with injuries, and that's not an uncommon thing for the Warriors to face the last couple of years, then this team surely would be in some type of trouble.
Yeah, I think that's probably the one thing, and knock on wood, you don't want to see Steph get injured, but they've all logged so many minutes, and we saw the injuries kind of catch up to them in the finals. You know, I don't like to say that, but that's just how it is, because they played just so many more games than other players. But on to the next team, Portland Trail Blazers at number 8.
Yeah, I'm one of the guys who's a little bit low on the Portland Trailblazers the most. You know, re-signing CJ McCollum in the offseason, you know, adding in Hassan Whiteside, Kent Bazemore, a few of these sort of guys. But they lost a lot. You know, obviously, Mo Harkless isn't the biggest loss, Al-Farouq Aminu. But they're losing this sort of wing depth, which I think is important to have. Yes, those guys don't make a shot in the postseason to save their lives, but they're still guys that you need to have in the regular season to have some sort of modicum of success to set yourself up for the postseason run. Damian Lillard and CJ are going to be great for years to come, and obviously they've locked up for pretty much the rest of their careers. But I don't really, and you know, Yusuf Nurkic, when's he going to be back? And, you know, when that is the case, you know, how does that sort of work with the sort of chemistry with Hassan Whiteside? I think Kent Bazemore's the nicest addition, and I think that he changes things a little bit for them. I think I've advocated this on the NBA outlet, you know, probably numerous times in this offseason. But Hassan Whiteside, that contract is a piece going forward that if you are the Portland Trailblazers and Kevin Love plays even 1 month of good basketball, you make that call to the front office and Kobe Altman over there, and you get on the phone immediately, because I think that's the move that can really take you above and beyond to make you probably a legitimate championship contender when it comes to this wide open 2019-20 season. But for me right now, I think they're almost worse than they were last season, because they lost a lot. And I think Seth Curry as well, brother to Steph, was a sneaky bad loss as well. Obviously, him heading to Dallas.
It's weird. I don't know if they got worse, but I don't think they got better. But they changed their pieces, if that makes sense. You know, they got Hassan Whiteside, which is okay, because with Nurkic going down and not being able to re-sign Kander, you need to have someone at the center position. I love the idea, Jack. I didn't even think about it. Maybe when Nurkic comes back, you then swap Whiteside for Love or some sort of scenario like that. That would be awesome to get Kevin Love on that team. They could use it. I know there's a ton of hype around Anthony Simons.
Anthony Simons, yeah.
Young guard. Looked really good in summer league in some glimpses. He's definitely going to play a big role for this team. They need him. I think Kent Bazemore was a solid sign, a guy who can play the wing and can give you some more scoring. He'll do like some of the stuff Evan Turner did, but provide a little bit more offense. Mario Hezonja, obviously, we know the moment against LeBron James last year is probably the highlight of his career at this point. But I think there is some sort of potential there to have a guy like him on their roster. And bringing back Rodney Hood was good. Obviously, Hood had a tremendous playoff run for them. Losing Aminu hurts a little bit. That was a really good wing defender for them. But again, it just feels like Portland just moved some pieces around. If they get Kevin Love, they definitely are way better. But right now, they're just, to me, right around the same spot.
Yeah, they just pretty much retooled a similar thing, maybe a little bit different style. Think like the one thing you're banking on to be your Portland, like Zach Collins, can he make a major jump this season and maybe become like a fringe type all-star player?
He's not that rebounder. That's one thing that worries me. And I think that he is almost more of a four right now. And I think that you can play him and maybe Whiteside together.
Yeah, and I think that's fine if you can play him at the four because he has the athleticism. And I think rebounding is not necessarily like the worst thing to be bad at because you can get better in that area. You know, you get physically stronger as you get older because he's still a pretty young player, if I'm not mistaken. And it's just like you just want it more. You want to get the rebound. But I think Portland 8 is okay. I could see them being lower than the Warriors or even closer to 10 or 11 than at number 8. But on to number 7, Utah Jazz.
I think this is where we start to get to the championship contenders, boys, because I think the Utah Jazz are probably the one, you know, obviously to the OTG writers and myself are on the fringes of that. But I think that everything that they have, they can certainly have a legitimate case to make the an NBA championship 20 in 2019-20 for that Larry O'Brien trophy because, you know, Mike Conley complimented Donovan Mitchell, who has been absolutely lights out at Team USA. You know, everyone's been hyped up about his jump shot, which looks even more slick and very compact, and he looks just amazing. You know, adding Corey's boy Bojan Bogdanović really gives him some scoring. Bit of an overpay, but that's what you have to do when it comes to free agency. And then our boy as well, Nick, adding a Davis to play up as the backup to Rudy Gobert, and obviously Jeff Green on the minimum signing, which I don't hate either. This Utah Jazz has a team right there that can challenge for a championship. Will they? I don't know. I think that it's going to come down to they're probably going to be a great regular season team, but when it comes to the postseason, that's where they really need to step up. But I think Mike Conley gives them some real steadiness, and I think that he almost galvanizes that team in a way. I think that I remember hearing somewhere, I can't remember which podcast, but you know, Ed Davis and Jeff Green were both like, "Look, we'll take unders to play with Mike Conley because he's such a great teammate and such a great guy." I think he's really going to elevate this team in so many different ways. Playing off the ball, he can play on the ball. He just frees up so many different guys. It's going to be a really good season for the Utah Jazz, and you know, being number 7 here, they could easily be in that top 5.
I mean, to me, this was a top 5 team. I mean, they're just deep. I mean, Royce O'Neal, Tony Bradley, Emmanuel Mudiay, Jeff Green, Ed Davis, Dante Exum, Joe Ingles, Bojan Bogdanović, Rudy Gobert, Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell. I expect all those guys to play minutes. Maybe not a lot of minutes for all of them, but this team just has a lot of talent on it. You mentioned them getting Jeff Green and Ed Davis. They had a connection to Mike Conley. Ed Davis was a workhorse for Brooklyn. You guys know this firsthand. You get rid of Favors, who was making $17 million. You get Ed Davis to be the insurance policy for Rudy Gobert. Not terrible at all. Jeff Green, yes, has a lot of inconsistent moments, but he's still a veteran, still a guy who has produced on some of the highest levels. Bogdanović got his money, three-point shooter, will add some scoring. The biggest thing for all of this is the fact that they gave Donovan Mitchell some offensive weapons around him. It's not going to be Donovan Mitchell facing double teams on a nightly basis. He will have Conley. He will have shooters around them. Rudy Gobert is still the best defensive center we have in the league until proven otherwise. He should get a little bit more. Maybe he gets better offensively with having so many floor spacers. Maybe it makes his job a little bit easier down low in the paint. And also, he has a point guard like Mike Conley who flourishes in the pick and roll, which we've seen with all of his time with Marc Gasol. So for Utah, I mean, I love it. This team on paper looks really good. We got to see it come together. But they got the right kind of balance between defense, offense, shooters, and just overall spacing.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really deep team, like you said, Corey, and this is a team that brought in a lot of talent. I could see them as high as top 5. You look at them, and just in terms of like record-wise, I would not be surprised they finish with the best record in the West just because they have a deep team and they don't have to really worry about, you know, guys playing too many minutes or things like that. And they don't have really any stars that are going to be like, I need rest. I'm really intrigued to see what Donovan Mitchell does this year, having Conley by his side, taking a lot of pressure off him. Where would you guys say they would rank in terms of contenders for you? What's like, is are they the seventh, you know, best contender, or would they be higher on your list?
I think I'd have them maybe above one or two teams in this list. But I think that I'm still not confident in their postseason sort of, you know, performances in the past. And until you can prove it to me otherwise, you know, I'm going to back the likes of Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James, you know, these sort of guys who have proven and been there and done that, even to a lesser extent, Giannis. You know, we haven't seen, you know, Donovan Mitchell lead a team. Mike Conley, I think, provides that. I think I touched on that a little bit. But, you know, I think that they're going to be a great regular season team. But, you know, when it gets down to it and that rotation is shortened, you know, Corey listed a heap of really good names there. But you only need 8 really good guys. And that's what happened with Toronto. You need 8 good guys and you need 8 quality guys. If they can find that quality rotation, you know, by game 82, then I think that they can be a legitimate contender. I would have them above the next team that we'll get to, and maybe even above the Denver Nuggets, because I think that, you know, the defense is what really matters at the end of the day when it comes to championships a lot of the time. And I think the Jazz are a much better defensive team than a lot of the teams that we're probably going to get to, including the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah, the experience matters. The only teams I have above them right now to, when I think about titles, would be the guys that actually have some experience. Kawhi Leonard, as you mentioned, LeBron James, as you mentioned. And then I would actually give the Bucks just a little bit more of an edge. They've had, obviously, every year in the playoffs, they've gotten a little bit farther, a little bit deeper. And I think that experience plays dividends, especially for a guy like Antetokounmpo to continue to progress. So I'd probably put Jazz fourth when it comes to contenders.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'd probably maybe give the Sixers a nod, but they still have a lot of pieces coming in. I think it's, you know, easily you could put them over the Rockets just because that's so James Harden, Russell Westbrook dependent. And like you said, Jack, the Nuggets, the Jazz are a better two-way team in terms of they can score offensively, but they still play great defense. Nuggets elite offensively. Defensively is where the question marks come in. But getting to number six, the Houston Rockets, thoughts on them being here?
Yeah, I mean, the million-dollar question, can Russell Westbrook and James Harden coexist? You know, doing previous pods, it was the million-dollar question when it came to James Harden and Chris Paul, but this is even more pressing. And I think that, you know, a lot of more people having some time to reflect on this signing and trade are starting to come around to the fact that, you know, maybe they can unlock a new version of Russell Westbrook. Maybe it's just the fact that he looks good in red, I don't know, and the headbands, you know, makes him look pretty cool. And Clint Capella's doing some nice things for Switzerland and FIBA. But I think that a guy that, you know, I'm going to give a shout-out to who probably hasn't gotten enough love over this Houston Rockets tenure is Eric Gordon. He's been simply outstanding and probably one of the, outside of James Harden, probably last season was their best player and was really good in the postseason too. Yes, PJ Tucker is going to continue to do what he does best and will probably end up starting for Team USA as that sort of four position and guy can hit the threes in the corner. But outside of that, they're essentially the same team. We talked about the Utah Jazz with depth. You know, I'll rattle off some names for you, Corey, in sort of like the opposite to what you were sort of saying, the Utah Jazz. Austin Rivers, Gerald Green, Daniel House, Gary Clark, Tyson Chandler, Ben McLemore, Anthony Bennett. Not necessarily the splashiest names when you rattle them off.
No, it's a disgusting list of names.
Oh, God.
if we're going to be honest, you just the highlight name was Austin Rivers, maybe. Like, that's concerning.
Ben McLemore or Anthony Bennett, baby, dominating the G League?
Ben, good old Ben McLemore. Kawhi Leonard loves stripping them. You know, I think the Rockets are an interesting conundrum. I feel like I'm hypocritical. I feel like I'm back and forth every time I talk about the Rockets because a part of me really loves the thought of James Harden and Russell Westbrook side by side. I like the tempo. I love the thought of them, Westbrook being in maybe the best system for him because it is so spaced the floor surrounded by shooters that he's never really had that to operate in. But again, these are the number one, number two usage guys in the NBA. Both guys like to take a lot of shots. Both guys like to dribble the ball a lot. What does that look like? Who takes the lesser of the usage rates? Is it Westbrook? Is it Harden? The coexistence of these two guys is the biggest question mark. I think they could be as high as a 3 seed in the West. They could be as low as like the 7 seed in the West if things fall
apart. Out of the playoffs, according to who was it that did the hot take?
Justin, new writer over at OTG.
That was spicy. We had Gus saying that they're going to win the championship, and then the couple of days later, we have a new OTG writer, Justin, jumping out there. It was just
And I think that perfectly describes the Rockets, right? I think this is just a team right now, especially after the disappointment last year that we really just don't know what this team is. Obviously, they tried to mix up the roster. They got rid of Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook. But again, it's just not a perfect fit. And that's been the Rockets' issue. They just haven't had the perfect fit of guys yet.
Well, they have. It happened in two seasons ago. And they just didn't hit the threes. And Chris Paul got hurt, but then so did Andre Iguodala. But, you know, revisionist history is hindsight's 2020, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I think
it's 7-3s.
I think, like, when you look at the Rockets, like you guys said, you know, they can really go higher, they could go lower. It all depends on how that new duo of Westbrook and Harden work out. Obviously, they are friends, so maybe that could be positive, but it's how are their styles really going to work together. Do you think there's a possibility the Rockets could be NBA champions this year?
Yeah, I think that, like I mentioned, you could certainly make an argument for any team. And I'm going to have a chat to you, both of you, after this. But I think that we could start a series for OTGBasketball.com, the case for, in terms of a lot of team championships, and have 7 or 8 articles on teams that can win the championship. I think the Houston Rockets can. If somehow, Russell, the lanes open up for Russell Westbrook, and now the fact that he has some shooters and not just guys like Terrence Ferguson, Jeremy Grant hanging along the wings who can't really hit up a spot up three, maybe that opens the lanes up for Russell Westbrook, because he is a sensational passer. And in the pick and roll with Clint Capella, we saw what he could do with Steven Adams. I think that there is certainly an argument that can be made, but if there's just 1 or 2 injuries, I think that, Corey was talking a little bit earlier, and Nick, you as well, about the Golden State Warriors and the miles on their legs. James Harden has had a ridiculous amount of miles on his legs, not just in the postseason, but in the regular season as well, where he just flogs himself to death. But now maybe you can sort of stagger those minutes a little bit, maybe rest him a game or two there, because Russell Westbrook can just sort of run it a little bit. But they don't have a lot of depth in that allows him to do so. But I think that there is a case for them, but it's not as strong as for a team like the Utah Jazz. But at least there's been a modicum of success for Houston in the past, because James Harden has sort of gotten that monkey off his back a little bit from a few seasons ago when that was that flame out run against San Antonio. He's been playing some decent basketball in the postseason.
You have a great point, Jack, that there is a possibility, but the minutes are something to be concerned about. It'll be interesting, because I think Westbrook and Harden have both been stubborn in the past about taking games off, but this year would make the most sense for them to take games off, so they're a little fresher for the postseason, obviously, if they get there. But number 5, Denver Nuggets.
I mean, the Denver Nuggets, there's a lot of teams that have a claim for the championship, and this is another one, maybe a team that could be 1 or 2 spots lower, but I think you look at their postseason run last year, Nikola Jokic, all the naysayers had to eat their words and then some, because he was simply outstanding. A guy that'll probably be in the running for an MVP as well. He's notoriously, despite the fact he doesn't look it, been healthy. He's going to lead Team Serbia probably to some sort of medal at the FIBA Championships as well. And obviously Jamal Murray signing that massive extension. I think that's where it comes down to. Can Jamal Murray take a step forward? I know Corey's spoken about he really likes the addition of Jeremy Grant, as do I. I really like the fact that Paul Millsap is still there, because he sort of holds everything together defensively. And then if you lose him going into next season, you've got Jeremy Grant there as insurance. But, I think that they still don't have a really great wing, which I think you need at least an average to above average wing. And I don't think that they really have that. You look at Torrey Craig, Juancho Hernan Gomez, Will Barton, these sort of guys. When you're coming up against the likes of Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James, how are you going to guard them? Paul Millsap can only do so much. So I think the Denver Nuggets will be similar to the Utah Jazz, have a great regular season. But if they make the play, how high they make the sitting in the playoffs and whoever they match up against, it's going to be tricky when it comes to, coming up against the star duos and PG and Kawhi and, AD and LeBron. But they've got the nucleus there. They've got depth. Mike Malone's proven it as a coach. And Nikola Jokic is a stud.
A team that keeps taking steps forward. Obviously, last year they bursted onto the scene and they were tremendous for the majority of the year. As Nick mentioned, the offense is not the issue with this team. It's the defense at times. I like Jamal Murray. His issue has been consistency. I expect him to be more consistent this upcoming year. We saw plenty of flashes of it in the regular season in the playoffs. I love Nikola Jokic. That is a guy who can do it all, rebounding, assisting, scoring in the post, even expanding his range to hit some three-pointers, some elbow jumpers. He can do it all. The defense is probably the biggest question mark, but if he gets a little bit more in shape, then I think the defense comes with it because he's still a big body. Millsap, good signing, or good, he opted in, right? Just good having Millsap back for the veteran leadership, as you mentioned, Jack. Jeremy Grant, love it. Gary Harris is probably a question mark. Didn't have a great year last year. I think he missed some time with injury. What does he look like? Will Barton was really bad for stretches last year after suffering an injury as well. Those two guys, they really need the offense from them. Gary Harris more so the defense. And then Michael Porter Jr. This is a guy they drafted a couple years ago or the year prior to last season, the 2019 draft or the 2018 draft, excuse me. What does he look like? Does he get on the floor finally? Because that could be their help at the wing position that you mentioned, Jack. It's a little bit of a hole right now. Or he could play the small ball four, or not a small ball four, just a four in general. So I like what the Nuggets have. the experience from this playoff run should do them well. Again, it's just how these guys continue to progress. But the Nuggets are certainly a team that should be in the conversation for NBA champions, or at least for the NBA title run.
Yeah, I think you guys nailed it. You know, this is a team that'll be a good regular season team, but it's like, who's going to make that jump to, you know, all-star level or beyond? Is that Jamal Murray? Is that Gary Harris? Does Michael Porter burst onto the scene and bring something? How does Jeremy Grant fit into this team? What does he provide? Is, you know, he's a nice defensive-minded player to pair next to Jokic. He could start at that four if they elect to bench a Paul Millsap and bring him off there. So there's a lot of interesting with the Nuggets, and I think just the biggest question mark for me is who takes the next step in becoming, you know, that next-level type player.
It has to be Jamal Murray. It just has to be.
And hopefully, I mean, he got paid like it, so it would be due.
Yeah, I would say Jamal.
And number four, though, we got the Philadelphia 76ers, a team that was very active this offseason that probably you didn't necessarily anticipate all the moves that happened.
A team with the most enormous size, maybe. You know, I'd love to go through the history archives, and there's probably some NBA Twitter stat nerd out there that probably can look up the overall size of a starting lineup. But, you know, Josh Richardson at 6'4", 6'5", is going to be the shortest bloke for the Philadelphia 76ers. And, you know, you get Al Horford, you know, you get a Joel Embiid stopper. So you sort of, you add one in that sort of sense. I think that the Philadelphia 76ers, you know, Charles Barkley's already said that they're guaranteed to make the finals. I'm not as necessarily high on that. You know, I think that Brett Brown, you know, we spoke about this on the Buzz with Pete Tolnick. The coaching of Brett Brown, I think, is going to be an underrated storyline. How he can sort of fit the pieces together for this team going forward. You know, Ben Simmons, you know, the turnaround jumpers that Corey has absolutely loved that he seems to be hitting. He's been not necessarily getting as much love from the Australian media, which has been a bit stupid in my eyes, but that's a discussion for another day. But yeah, Joel Embiid, Al Horford, this starting lineup looks great. Tobias Harris, can he now with the absence and the departure of Jimmy Butler, can he really make his mark on this team as sort of being a closing scorer? Because, you know, when you're going down into the sort of final, you know, minute of the game and you're putting the ball in someone's hand, who's it going to be? Is it Tobias Harris? Is it Joel Embiid? You know, you're wanting to get a bucket down low, you do it old school style. I'm really intrigued to sort of see how healthy is Joel Embiid. You know, has he lost any weight? Is he still eating Chick-fil-A and having 85 milkshakes a day? You know, at the end of the day, they'll go as far as Joel Embiid will take them. But I think I've made this take before that I don't think the Philadelphia 76ers can win a championship with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid on the same team.
Yeah, I mean, that's the Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid point you just made, Jack. I think I made this on the outlet a few times. Their styles just don't necessarily match well. Right, Ben Simmons is a guy who can't shoot, needs to get out in transition. Joel Embiid just isn't that great of a player in transition. Obviously not terrible, but when he's out in transition, they're running, that's when he settles for those long threes or those top of the key three pointers, which he can hit, but doesn't hit him to a high percentage, at least not yet. Obviously, this team is going way against the grain with their size. The smallest guy in their starting lineup is Josh Richardson at 6'6". Everyone else, you know, 6'10 Ben Simmons, I think like what, 6'9 Tobias Harris, 6'10 Al Horford, 7 foot Joel Embiid. It's a really tall team. The bench is still an issue. Zaire Smith, you're going to be leaning on. James Ennis, Kyle Quinn, I think it was a solid addition. Raul Neto is an okay. Trey Burke, probably need a lot of him, aka Calvin Cambridge from Blank Mike. You know, this Sixers team is definitely going to be in the hunt for the NBA championship this year. They're going to be atop the East, I assume, because Embiid should get better. Simmons should get better. And Al Horford is a great just security blanket veteran to have. To me, this team, I don't know. I could see this going really well or going really bad because it is just a weird combination of players in the starting lineup.
Yeah, I think there is some possibility for it not to be as successful as anticipated, but there's also the possibility of it going really well. I think this team could make one move at the trade deadline. It doesn't even have to be necessarily like an all-star type player, just somebody to give them maybe more spacing on an elite shooter or something like that. And then all of a sudden you could be looking at them as the favorite to win the East. So I think at four for the Sixers is fine, but it wouldn't be surprising if they dropped a couple spots. Do you guys think they can beat the Bucks in a 7-game series?
Yes, I think that they can. I think that Al Horford is one of the best defenders of Giannis across the league. But at the same time, you know, the offense. Are they going to be getting enough buckets to sort of counter, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks and their sort of three-point shooting heavy offense? I think that that's the likely sort of finals that we do see, and the matchups throughout the season could give us an indicator of what could be of more to come. And, you know, I think that the trade deadline additions and any sort of trades and that sort of happened there and buyout market, you know, I think that, you know, a guy like Kyle Korver adds a little bit to the Bucks as well. We'll get to them very, very shortly. But I think the Sixers certainly can. And, you know, if I were to say right now, I'd probably bank it on being a game, a series that would go at least six games at the bare minimum.
I agree. I think they have the potential to probably beat the Bucks. The Bucks would probably be the favorite right now. Obviously, a lot of things can change by the end of the season. Young players getting better, guys being hurt, whatever it may be. But moving on to number three, now into the top three, Los Angeles Lakers.
Man, I don't know how much time we've got to speak about the Los Angeles Lakers. I'm going to try and keep it short, but LeBron James, do we see the LeBron James, the best player in the league, the number one guy? Is he healthy again? Does he play 70-plus games? How does he work alongside Anthony Davis? And then you look at the supporting cast of Quinn Cook, Rajon Rondo, Danny Green, DeMarcus Cousins, Kyle Kuzma, who says he wants to be the sort of third guy and a part of a big three, JaVale McGee, and of course, Jared Dudley. but, you know, this Lakers team has championship aspirations. To me, this doesn't really look like a championship team, but, you know, any team that has LeBron James certainly has a claim for that. He has to be healthy. Anthony Davis has to fit well with him. And the supporting pieces really do need to be that. They need to be the complementary pieces that we've seen, you know, in Cleveland, in Miami. They need to be superstar players in their role, as Tristan Thompson has said in the past. If they can really buy into that, if Kyle Kuzma can take some sort of a jump and Team USA can have a really positive effect on him, then we might see this Los Angeles Lakers team, you know, outrank and outperform their, not really crosstown rivals, their town rivals in the Clippers and actually steal the championship away from them. But right now, I'd have the Clippers just above them just because I think that I like how that everything works and fits there that little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Lakers are going to be led by LeBron James, Anthony Davis. How much does this 2.5 months help LeBron James in the long term? We know the miles on his legs. Does he have a chip on his shoulder by all the people already pretty much saying he's done? His best years are behind him. Do we get that one last year of an FU tour maybe? How good does Anthony Davis look? The rest of the roster, I mean, we've talked about this. It's a little bit eh. They obviously waited a long time for Kawhi Leonard. They lost some out on some of the better role players in the league. They were able to get DeMarcus Cousins. And, you know, we saw the worst happen to DeMarcus Cousins. You know, we saw another leg injury last year in the playoffs. What does he look like after two leg injuries? Does he get back to being remotely the same player? Because if he does, then this is what we talked about a couple of years ago when AD and DeMarcus Cousins first paired up. People were talking about what could it look like with LeBron James alongside those two dominant big men. Well, we could honestly see that this year. Danny Green was a solid addition. I think the Lakers still need probably a piece or two. I just don't think this is a team that you go into the playoffs with and you think, yes, we can win a title. I think it's definitely a very good team. I just think they're missing something. But at the same time, you know, they're still third. I think this is where I had them third. This is probably where they are right now, and the Bucks Clippers being ahead of them is fitting.
Yeah, and I think you just look at it is the Lakers have Anthony Davis and LeBron James, two of the best players in the NBA, you know, two top five guys, the best duo in the league. The rest of the team isn't necessarily an amazing fit. That's why they're at three and the Bucks and Clippers are ahead of them, because the Bucks and Clippers are better constructed teams.
Yes.
I just realized I had them at seven. Wow, I was low on the Lakers. I can see why I was, and I probably that could probably change very, very quickly. But I think I was, like Corey said, I was pretty down on just the fit of the other pieces outside of LeBron and AD.
I think, like, you look at the guard situation. You know, you have Danny Green at the two guard, but then other than that, like, there's just a lot of question marks about who's going to give you good minutes in the clutch. And then obviously, like, to Cousins, is he going to be impactful this year, or is he just going to struggle and really be someone that the other team can attack defensively?
Yeah.
On to number two, though, Milwaukee Bucks, top team in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, the Milwaukee Bucks, you know, obviously, what art does the loss of Malcolm Brogdon, I think that, you know, they're really going to need Eric Bledsoe to step up. They need him to be, you know, he's now the guy, and he needs to step up in the postseason. I don't think regular season matters at all for this team. You know, Eric Bledsoe can do what he wants in the regular season, put up some numbers. We know what we're going to get from Giannis, and he is going to continue to grow. He's not even close to his fully formed version of himself. He's even said that himself. Chris Middleton at Team USA as well, probably the guy that goes under the radar quite a bit. A really great wing, a bucket getter, a guy who can play defense. Brook Lopez getting paid. And obviously his boy, his bro, Rolo, joining him as well. You know, the Bucks will be, you know, in the finals or in the finals conversation, you know, in the East or overall, Giannis will lead them, you know. But I think that for me, the number one sort of thing is, you know, how do they offset the loss of Malcolm Brogdon? And for me, it's going to come down to Eric Bledsoe and if he can actually step up as a guy who can actually play effective basketball when it comes down to it in the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, the Bucks, best team in the East, I think that should go. I think that's how it should be. I mean, this is a team that was in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. Antetokounmpo should get a little bit better. I don't know what word I only
said. Was the word. That's the word you're looking for.
Yeah, Chris Middleton should get better. Bledsoe, yes, the offense is the question mark. The defense is still really good. We maybe even undersell the defense at times. Brogdon's definitely going to be a loss. Still have George Hill. You have both Lopez brothers now. I mean, I don't hate what the Bucks have. You're just hoping that the money you put into Chris Middleton, the money you put into Eric Bledsoe last year when you re-signed him, and Antetokounmpo, you hope that these three guys still have more to go in their games. Obviously, Bledsoe looks like his ceiling may be hit, but you expect Antetokounmpo and Middleton to get better. How much? I'm not positive, but I still, and Kyle Korver too, they signed this offseason. I like what the Bucks have. I think they're a solid team, and you're just hoping that your star becomes what he's, you know, quote unquote, destined to become.
Yeah, I think you just look at the Bucks, and obviously they're fine at this spot. They're still the best team in the East. It's just more about the playoffs. It's just, can guys step up in the playoffs? You know, we saw just players not play well. You guys mentioned Eric Bledsoe. Chris Middleton played good defense, but his offense was, you know, absent for a lot of that series against the Raptors. And then Brook Lopez was kind of inconsistent as well. So it's like, who can be a consistent performer for the Bucks and Coach Bud in a postseason series against a really good team? You know, they've matched up with the Sixers, and the Sixers are just more consistent and guys are hitting. And you, in some ways, you might feel more confident about the Sixers' consistency as a starting unit than you might feel about some of the Bucks guys, because it just felt like last year's postseason for the Bucks was really sporadic. One guy would have a really good series in the first series, and the next round would be another guy. And then when they needed people to step up, it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
So it'll be an interesting year, and obviously they possibly can make a move. I know they've traded a lot of their draft picks moving forward, but even a small upgrade or somebody on the buyout market could be the difference, because the Bucks are right there. It's just a little push they need. And obviously, number one, Los Angeles Clippers, you know, when you pick up Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, you're probably going to be number one.
And you retain Montrezl Harrell, Lou Williams, Landry Shamet. It's a stacked team, and, you know, Ivica Zubac as well. I think they overpaid him a little bit. I think that's one underrated move that they made that probably wasn't the best. But when you're Steve Ballmer, you got all the money in the world, and you're running around, and, you know, I think that Steve Ballmer, he is the epitome of what a rich guy should be. You know, you use your money, you got a basketball team, you go out there, you be happy about life. You know, you throw it around and you try shaking hands with Kawhi in this some sort of weird way. and you try and move out and, you know, establish the Clippers as a new brand going forward. But the Clippers are the championship favorites. They have the best team. You know, Patrick Beverley re-signing as well. I think that the one worry for them is, you know, playmaking. You know, there's a lot of guys that can create their own shot. But as a passing team, you know, these guys are a very ISO sort of heavy. And who's going to be sort of feeding that ball to Landry Shamet on the perimeter, who can sort of hit those threes? All these guys can create for themselves. I think Kawhi showed it a little bit in the postseason, and Nick Nurse unlocked that for him a little bit. But Doc Rivers is going to have, you know, he's really excited to sort of get into training camp, as a lot of these guys will be. When Paul George comes back will be certainly a sort of key indicator for their win-loss sort of category and where they end up in the standings. But it's said that he's going to miss around 6 weeks, I believe, to start the season. So that leaves them behind the eight ball a little bit. But even with just Kawhi to start the season, they're still one of the best teams in the NBA. And I think there's going to be a lot of eyes on them. And the LA rivalry is going to be very fun to watch.
In some timeline, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George are on the Indiana Pacers. So now the Clippers.
That was actually really close to happening. So there is definitely a timeline.
So now you look at this Clippers team, the scrappy team that gave the Warriors a headache in the first round last year, is basically still intact, plus Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, minus what, Gallinari? And I'm not even sure who else they lost.
That was Shakelis Alexander.
Okay, yeah, and that's a decent loss. But again, you have Montrezl Harrell, Patrick Beverley, Zubac, Shamet, Maurice Harkless was a solid signing.
Yeah.
Magruder is solid. Jermichael Green, getting him or retaining him, good. I like what the Clippers have. Like you mentioned, Jack, there is some concern because there isn't a true ball handler facilitator on this roster. There is a lot of guys who primarily go after their own shot, or their role is to be a spot-up shooter. So that will be an interesting thing to maneuver. But it's Doc Rivers, one of the best coaches we have in the league. He showed that last year with this Clippers team. And again, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, two of the best wing guys we have in the NBA. We talk about wing players being one of the most important positions that we have in the NBA currently, and they have arguably the best two guys at that position.
Yeah, no, their team is just really stacked, and you guys mentioned the ball handling, and that definitely could probably have an impact in the regular season in terms of the win total. But I think in the postseason where things really slow down, you get a lot of isolations, it probably won't matter as much because you just have guys that can go get you a bucket in Kawhi, Paul George, and then Lou Will. So there's just a lot of positives. And then even, they missed their shot. You got Montrezl Harrell, one of the best offensive rebounders, a guy that's just pure hustle. So you just really like what the Clippers have as a team. Like, it's just overall, they didn't just go get Paul George and Kawhi. They constructed a really good team.
Yeah, yeah. Not to cut you off, Jack, I think Zubac, too, we saw him in a bigger role with the Clippers really come into his own a little bit. There could be more to his game coming as well.
Yeah, and I think that there has to be good, because I was going to say that, you know, they lack a little bit of rim protection. You know, Montrezl Harrell isn't a great defender. You know, he provides energy, but I think energy is almost overlooked, his actual tangible skills on that end. But I think that they can address probably either that defensive rim protection or the ball handling and sort of playmaking, because they still have their 2020 first round picks. So they still have one up their sleeve. So if they wanted to make a move at the deadline and they wanted to trade for someone and add in that sort of first round pick and some other sort of piece around that, they could get someone who is handy, because, you know, first round picks are still valuable. And as well, Andre Iguodala,
I don't even know if they can trade any first round picks at this point.
Well, I'm pretty sure they can. I'm pretty sure that they can still trade. They still have this year's one. I think that not this year's one, next year's one, the 2021, because I think that they got that, or because they kept it, but they acquired because they used the Maurice Harkless pick, which was, you know, they got one from Portland, and they added that into the Shakelis Alexander trade for Paul George. So I'm pretty sure they still have one with the deal that they can make. And this is one of the teams as well that's going to be in the running for Andre Iguodala. If they add him, boy, oh boy, no one's scoring a bucket against his Clippers.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what they could do. And even if they don't elect to trade a pick, because they might have one available, but that'd probably be the only one they have for a while in terms of like pick swaps and whatnot, obviously with the Paul George trade. But it's another team that's going to be very active in the buyout market, and they'll have no issue there. All right, guys, any final thoughts? That's obviously top 30 recorded, the bottom 15 on the last episode. This was the top 15, and I can run down the list. Starting from the top, we got Clippers, Bucks, Lakers, Sixers, Nuggets, Rockets, Jazz, Blazers, Warriors, Celtics, Pacers, Nets, Raptors, Spurs, and Miami Heat.
Top 15. All 30 done. Read it and weep.
And this will be the order we'll be using for the NBA Outlet Preview Series, which will be dropping later this month. As always, a pleasure talking hoops with you, Corey and Jack. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You can check us out iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube.
Peace out, knuckleheads.
Wow, I don't know what to say.